Hi, everyone. Welcome to this Boston Book Festival Unbound panel for We Are America, Voices of the Nation's Future. Thanks so much for being here today. My name is Charles Fitzgibbon with Facing History and Ourselves, and I'm thrilled to engage in conversation with these incredible young adults and their tirelessly supportive teacher about the books they've published and about the power of storytelling. So last January, I had the privilege of traveling with Jess Lander, and her students on a learning trip to Montgomery, Alabama. We were there as part of their seminar on American diversity at Lowell High School to witness firsthand the history of some of this country's deep roots of racism, juxtaposed with the power of anti-racist movements. For example, steps from what had once been a market for enslaved people in the heart of the city was later the bus stop where Rosa Parks waited to take a seat in the front. The Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, where we also visited, was home to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Dr. King was just a young man of 25 years when he was called to be its pastor. From there, we climbed the hill from that church to the steps of the state capitol building, craning our necks to see the top of a towering memorial to Confederate soldiers. Yet imagining the words of Dr. King soaring even higher as he spoke to the thousands of marchers who stood together, having just completed their journey from Selma at the height of the civil rights movement. And there was, of course, the slave warehouse, where families were brutally separated and locked away to await the auction block and a fate unknown, now home to the offices of the Equal Justice Initiative, where we met legal fellows fighting to end the practice of capital punishment and to seek healing for our nation's open wounds of slavery, racial terror lynching, and a fiercely discriminatory criminal justice system. I share all this because of how each night of this trip, we would circle up together in the lobby of our hotel and tell each other stories. Stories of how we made sense of and were impacted by this learning. Our feet and hearts soar. Our stories express anger and confusion and search for hope. We listened, laughed, and cried. Through stories, we formed a family. As Bryan Stevenson would say, only by being proximal to this history was this reckoning with trauma and freedom and healing, this honest, visceral storytelling possible. Upon returning to Lowell, the students got to work. The class wrote their book, We Are America, and spread the conversation. The next semester's class wrote their own book, not to be outdone, called We Are America 2, that's T-O-O, and kept the conversation going. Together, these books are a compilation of voices, each presenting a story of life, of personhood, and of family, of hope, of fear, and of resilience, of healing, of justice, and of action. Together, these stories tell us about the meaning and making of home and call us to reflect on where we are today in this home we call America, where we each have come from and where we may choose with courage to go together. So since publication, the books have been widely read both near and far by community members, school leaders, and local elected officials. They've been shared on the radio and in print and digital media, and they've been read and praised by State Attorney General Maura Healey, Congresswoman Catherine Clark, Senator Elizabeth Warren, and Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, just to name a few. No big deal. And still the work continues. They've now taken this storytelling nationwide through the We Are America Project, engaging 36 teachers in 23 states to empower over 1,300 students to tell their stories. These students here serve as coaches for these teachers, providing curricular and logistical support and helping to frame their classes through the lenses of history, proximity, justice, and voice. So I want to conclude these notes with a quote by Professor Charles Thompson of Duke University, who writes in his book, Border Odyssey, Travels Along the U.S.-Mexico Divide, that quote, stories are the opposite of walls. They demand release, retelling, showing, connecting, each image chipping away at boundaries. Now, even though most of these students have since graduated, not all, but most, and have now embarked on their next chapter of life, they recognize the work is unfinished, that there are more walls and boundaries to chip away at, and that storytelling just might be the way. It's as if they've become the embodiment of the words of civil rights leader Fannie Lou Hamer, nobody's free until everybody's free. So I'm inspired by the fact that by the end of this academic year, we'll have that many more stories that have chipped away at divides, that many more ways to transcend borders. So I've talked enough. We're now going to hear from our panelists. I think we'll start by just going down the line and sharing your name, if you're not currently at Lowell High School, where you are now and what you might be studying. And you can also share if you are at Lowell High School, where you are. And then maybe a two-sentence description of the story that you wrote for the book.
Is it on? Yeah, it is. So my name is Ezekiel Nunez. I graduated from Lowell High School last year. I attend Fitchburg State University on a political science major. And my story was about coming to the U.S. and escaping a place of violence to coming and find a safe place to live.
My name is Idalise Fernandez. I'm currently a senior at Tewksbury High. And my story was about the relationship with my father and how it made me acknowledge that everyone has their own way of showing what love is and expressing emotion towards everyone else.
Hi, my name is Lucira Kabuba. I'm currently attending the University of Massachusetts in Lowell. I'm a first-generation college student. And my story is about how I got to experience racism, and I also reflected on how previously how it affected me before.
Hello, my name is Philly Marte. I am a political science major at Western New England University in Springfield. My story is about how I grew up kind of blind to all the problems in the world, and more importantly, how truly important diversity was, because I grew up with diversity. So I wrote about growing up and realizing it's not the same everywhere else.
Hi, my name is Diane, and I'm at Middlesex Community College. I'm doing liberal art right now because I don't have a major particularly that I want to pursue. And my story is about belonging. I grew up in a community where I was not recognized as a citizen, and I was not particularly accepted. And when I came here, I realized that I'm one of 1,000 people who are not recognized in many countries.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kat. I'm a freshman at MIT, planning on joint majoring in urban planning and computer science. And for my story in We Are America, I shared the experiences that led me to start a nonprofit that helps high schoolers discover science communication.
Hi, everyone. My name is Safi Al-Samurai. I'm a freshman at Middlesex Community College, and I'm majoring in nursing. My story is about why I left Iraq when I was 11 years old and how immigrant families sacrifice for their kids.
And I'm Jessica Lander. I am not a student at college or high school. I am a teacher at Lowell High, currently on sabbatical, writing my next book. And I had the honor of being all of these wonderful young people's teacher last year.
Great. So let's get started. I have a question first for Philly and for Ezekiel. If you could just tell us a little bit about the course that you took last year, this seminar on American diversity. What was that course about?
Yeah, so as you said in the beginning, it was a semester course. In the course, we dove and analyzed the history of America, famous movements, different genocides, and how that story has kind of relates to all the identities that we have in American identity. In the course, we also explore our own identities and how we felt and what we thought we were, like Americans, and all the different identities that we have. We also had discussions every week and like analyzed the history that we had done. And as he said, obviously, the end of the class was writing the book about what it means to be American.
For the first 3 days of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we looked into past Supreme Court cases, different litigations that have been passed and changed over the years. On Thursday, we had an activity called a Socratic Circle. It's basically a 45-minute discussion run only by students. Ms. Lane took a break from teaching that day, so she left us alone to discuss
it's a great
what we talked
trick.
About this week. On Friday, it was student-led classes, so the students were, a select few students were researching and making up a lesson plan throughout the week, and then presented on Friday, which really helped confidence and presentation. Yeah, that was a week.
Okay, great. That's a good teacher trick. When I was a teacher in New York City, I would often try to find ways that the class could run itself so I could sort of take a seat back and just evaluate from the sideline. The next question for Safia and Kat. Could you talk about your takeaways from the course? What was sort of the main things that you got from taking the course with Ms. Lander?
For me, personally, I feel like seeing the stories that my friends and my peers have wrote, that I'm not the only one who left their country and left their home. And I'm not the only one that struggled with English or struggled getting in school in the first year. So being like related to other people and seeing that makes you a little bit more comfortable from who you are. And that's my biggest takeaway from that.
One of my biggest takeaways from this class was that there's a lot of history that we don't learn about. I remember learning about, in We Are America, I remember learning about things like the Lavender Scare, which was similar to the Red Scare, happened along the same time, but it was targeted towards homosexuals and the LGBTQ community at large, as well as the Stonewall Riots that kicked off the gay liberation movement. And these are just things that I wasn't learning in my other history classes. And so that really solidified the fact that history is written by those in power, and the history that we learn is often one-sided, at least not the full picture.
Yeah, thank you so much. So with that in mind, thinking about finding voice and finding perspective and kind of shifting perspectives on how we understand the world around us, this is a question for Lucy and for Diane and for Idalise. How did all that inform writing the book? What was that process like for you, both in the ideas that you were kind of gathering and how you were thinking about what you would write for your story for this book?
So the progress of writing the book was that we would always we would have an assignment to listen to moth stories, and moth stories are stories that are told by various people around America, and each story has a lesson at the end. They can either be happy or sad. There's various ones. So that really helped get students to understand that it's okay to share their own stories, and no matter what, someone out there can relate to that story.
Well, I have to point out something. It's like we went to one class. The day it's like a normal day, we go to class, and the teacher just says, you're going to write a book in this class, and if you know you can't write it, start off. I was on the dole because I'm not a writer, but personally, I know that I'm not a writer. So I was like, I am now staying in this class. But as I continued to study in this class, I understood that it was the right place for me, and it was actually a place I was supposed to be. It was a place to uncover what I didn't know. And how this course impacted was what I wanted to write about. I didn't basically know exactly what I wanted to write about because I was having a lot going on. I am an immigrant. I don't know my course or what I want to do in college, and I need a job too. So I was like, should I write about this? Should I write about this? But when we did the TED Talks and all the things we did in class, I realized that I just had to talk about what I have gone through to encourage somebody else who is going through the same thing.
Along with what Diane said, I was also one of those people that had no idea what they wanted to write for their story, because I've never thought of what story would define me, per se, as a person. And I just remember starting writing this story. I would read my peers' stories, and they would have their whole entire story written out because they figured out what they wanted to represent them, and I was just confused the whole time. And it wasn't until Ms. Lander pushed me to like talk about the things I was uncomfortable with talking about that I realized what my story should be about and like what has happened through my life. And I think from the course, if anything impacted me the most, it's the people that were in that course, because they really helped me figure out what I wanted to, like, what part of me I wanted to share in this book.
I think that's such a powerful reflection and a powerful question to extend to anyone else who'd like to chime in. How did you go about choosing what to write about? Thinking about your entire life, everything you've been through, how did you select that one story that you thought was going to be the story to offer to your peers and to the world?
Well, basically, one day I had a class with her before, and we usually talk, like during advisory, we'd go to class and talk about what we're going through. And this one day I told her that, you know, I've been living for 17 years and I've never been recognized as a citizen of any country. And then she was like, oh, really? We searched through it and we found out there was a lot of people who have gone through the same thing. And then as we went on, like the next time I took her class, American Diversity, I was looking for what I should write about, and then she picked it out. I was like, okay, I was not thinking in that direction. So that's how my story came up.
Yeah, it's interesting, Diane, to have gone from Ms. Lander saying, okay, we're going to write a book, to you trying to bolt from the room, to actually realizing that you have a story that could be very valuable for others to hear. Yeah. Would anyone else like to chime in on how you selected your story and why that story was so significant for you to share?
For me personally, when we took the trip to Montgomery, really changed my perspective on how America came to be. I didn't really learn much about, you know, the history of America because I didn't really grow up here. So when people see me, they think, oh, you know, she's black. She must know, like, you know, what happened. She's African American. But the fact is that I didn't really know much. So it really opened my eyes, and I thought maybe, okay, it's time for me to tell my story because, because at the time I didn't really think, you know, it was that big. I thought it happened to everyone. That's how life was. So when I got to actually sit down and write about it, I understood, oh, you know, it really impacted me and how I saw the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy. Idalise?
When I went to go write my story, I remembered a story I've always told my whole life, and that was the story of the relationship between me and my father. And I've always repeated it to my family, and they've always just kind of said, like, oh, that's just you complaining about the situation. And I remember when I told my friends from this class this story, they realized what I hadn't realized, that it was actually something that matters to me a lot, and it's kind of been degraded my whole life. And to write this story and have it in the book and have my peers and people who read it see how impactful it is in my life really is like a cool thing for me. And yeah.
Yeah, something powerful of turning a story that was once sort of a place of tenderness into something very empowering, you know, and sharing that as a point of pride in some way. And I guess the flip side to that question is, what was it like to read your peers' stories? You know, it's one thing to reflect on and think critically about your own life and what you might share. Now that it's sort of one among so many other stories, what was that experience like? And almost having a whole compilation of stories together tells a larger story. So what is it like to read your peer stories and to get a glimpse of what life is like, what it means to be American is for them? Philly?
Personally for me, reading everyone's story, it was an incredible experience. I didn't think it would be that big or that major, but reading a piece of everyone's life, it changes you. It changes your view on everything. It's honestly, incredible is the only word I could use. When you start reading other people's stories, you realize that no matter who you are, you have a story to tell. And every story you have and could think of, no matter how insignificant you think it is, it's important to someone to hear it. And that's the impact it had on me.
Yeah, reading everyone's stories made me realize why this project was so impactful. And it's that even though I personally felt like, oh, my story is just, you know, it's my story, it's whatever, I'm just one person. When you put all of them together, that's where the power comes in. And you realize that everyone is interesting. Everyone has a complex life, and you can't really make assumptions about that because really, like, all of these stories just challenge my assumptions about everyone. And so I realized that it's powerful when people come together and make a collective effort like this. And also, every story was also really powerful because it was so authentic and everyone was so vulnerable and open to sharing.
I agree with Kat in a sense.
Trying to tell their story too.
Reading the stories, I guess I realized that when I first walked into this class, I made a lot of judgments on the people that were in that class, and I assumed a lot in the people. And reading their stories made me realize that who they are on the outside is not who they are. Who they are, like, as a person, as a whole, and it made me realize, like, that I need to be more open to, like, understanding people when they explain themselves, not just finding a definition for someone because of how they look.
For me, actually, reading my friend's story make me realize what story I want to write about myself. Because at first, when Ms. Lander says, you need to write a story, I was like, what do I write about? Like, I don't know. And reading my friend's story and seeing that they're, like, I have a lot of friends who are immigrant. They came from Dominican Republic, Haiti, all around the world. And in the story, they tell why they left their home country. And at that moment, I was like, why did I leave my home? I left when I was 11, and I didn't know, like, why. So I asked Ms. Lander, I was like, I don't know why. And she advised me at that time, and she said, go to your parents, sit down on the dinner table, and ask them why. And really, that's the moment when I said, yes, I'm gonna write that story, and that's going to be my story.
Yeah, Diane, go ahead.
Okay, reading my peer's story was more like a strength to me. I used to understand and feel like I've gone through a lot, and then I don't have time to catch up. I don't have, like, time to really work on myself as a person. But after reading the stories, I understood that every person has something they're going through. And after putting the stories together, this story became like a strength to me. Thank you.
So we've thought about your own telling and reading the stories of your peers. Let's think a little bit more broadly about the audience for the book. I'm curious about who, as you're writing it, if you were thinking about it, who do you hope that the book reaches? And what messages would you like them to receive by reading this book?
Personally, I wish everyone reads the book. Not because
shameless
we wrote
plug
it.
Shameless plug for the book sales.
They're outside, $10. besides that, I believe just reading people's stories is important. Understanding that we are all here, we all have our own lives, we all have our own stories to tell. I believe that if they read it, the world will honestly become a better place. The more you read about other people, the more understanding you become. Like Italy said, she made a lot of judgments beforehand, but she learned that they're not as they appear to be. I just hope they learn that no matter who you are, there's someone behind the face. There's thoughts, ideas, a whole destiny ahead of them, and we have no idea where we're going. And we're all on the same boat. So the more you read, the more you learn about other people, the easier the ride's gonna be.
Okay, Diane, also wanna comment? Go ahead.
I think that everybody needs to read this book, particularly teens, because when teens are going through a lot, we actually think what is happening right there, not what is the consequences and what comes after. So if you're a teen and then you read this book, you understand that, oh, this person is going through this and I'm going through it, or this person is going through what I'm going through, or has gone through a lot than me. And it might be a strength to those teenagers around the world.
I personally think that a lot of adults need to read the book because I'm not saying that all adults do, but some do assume that, okay, we grew up this way, so kids must not, you know, they don't go through the struggle, or or sometimes teens don't want to share with their parents or what's going on or the struggle or anything. So I feel like if they read the book and sit there or share with their own child, they might come to an understanding about, okay, my parent is here, they understand, maybe I can share with them what's going on.
Yeah, thinking of the larger theme of the book, what it means to be American, I would say elected officials should definitely focus and read our book, because their job is to work for the American people. And how are they going to work for Americans? They don't know who the Americans are.
Everyone can gain from the perspective sharing that you're offering. I want to shift a little bit to talk about this larger project that has been kicked off this academic year called the We Are America Project. And I put out a couple of statistics in the beginning about you know, how many teachers and how many states, how many students are now being reached. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about what this project is about. And so for Ezekiel, Safia, and for Kat, just if you could, if one of you could describe just an overview of this project, kind of what it's all about, its goals, its mission, I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so since these two books are published back in last spring and winter, we've done a lot of things with them. We've spoken at local universities, and we've gotten a lot of people to buy them and read them. We've sent them, like Charles mentioned, to our local representatives, to Supreme Court justices, also to Ellen. Still waiting to hear back from her. But basically, we realized that this is a really impactful and exciting project, and we want to take this far beyond Lowell. And so what we're doing is a national We Are America project, and it really feels national. We're working with teachers all the way from like rural Arkansas to inner city Chicago, up in Maine, down to Florida, to as close as Cambridge, Massachusetts.
As Kat said, we also like Ms. Lander chose us to be like, we're the one who are connected to the teachers, not like us who wrote the first, the authors of the first book, who are gonna connect the teachers and help them with the curriculum of the book. And we have almost 37 teachers from 22 states for all around the nation. And we're currently gonna end up with almost 1,300 stories from the students who wrote the book.
So in thinking about those students, over 1,300 students reached, this question for Philly and Diane, why do you believe it's important for young people in particular to be doing this work?
I think personally we need to broaden the definition of what it means to be an American, simply because while we are all growing up, I'm sure everyone in this room relates to this, while we're growing up, we're trying to find our own identity. We're all transitioning to adulthood. We have no idea what we are, who we are, what we're going to do, why we're going to do it. It's hard to find labels when you're growing up. And honestly, for some people, it's hard to find labels while they're adults because of some of the conversations that's been going around. I believe that if we broaden what it means to be an American, everyone will have a place where they can feel safe, feel connected, and feel like they belong. I think every person on earth deserves that, at least. So personally, if you're here, you're an American, and that's all you need.
I feel like every teenager and every youth want to fit in a particular place and society. If we give our teenagers an understanding of what an American is, we're preparing a ground for them to be like stronger people and have confidence and self-esteem that nobody can just shake off. And then, you know, I feel like if teenagers understand who they are and where they come from and particularly what they want to be, it's going to come all from understanding who an American is. We should actually advocate and talk about it more, that all the youth should really understand what it means to be an American.
Yeah. I just wanted to also add that I think the way we're doing this work is really interesting. Like, this book is not, you know, a political book. It's not a book of policy recommendations. But what it is we're showing the lives, like the personal stories of a bunch of different types of Americans. And by reading that, we'll sort of change our mindset, and then that'll help people who are in the position to make policies and laws to, it'll shape the way that they think about their work. But it's not directly saying that you should do this or you should change the definition of American to that.
That's great. Thank you so much. I'm just thinking about when I was a teenager, I wish I had this book. I was a hot mess. It would have been really helpful. So for the next question for Safia, Elise, and Lucy, what's been something exciting about this national project for you? I know maybe this question could be with your personal interactions with the teachers you're working with, or something surprising that you hadn't really expected. But if you could share something about, so far, this academic year, something exciting.
In my life, I've never thought that I could help a teacher with their lesson, like, oh, you know, you can do this or do that. So that's pretty cool. And I'm looking forward to reading all of the students, all of the students' stories. That would be pretty cool, too.
For me, I received an email from a teacher that we're working on a lesson, which is, if you read the book, the first page was my skin color. And her students completed that page. And when we read, all of us read the first page, our heart just melt. Like, we were like, oh, my God. We started just crying and stuff. It was like... But, like, they did it better than we did. Like, they were awesome. Yeah.
I think the most exciting thing about this project for me personally is that I got an email from my teachers talking about how their students are excited to write this book and how they're prepared to tell the world who they are. And I find that so cool, because I know when I started writing this book, I was not up for it. I did not know what I was getting myself into. And I just think it's so cool that they know what they want to write about and they know what is going to identify them and what they want the world to know about themselves. And it's honestly amazing.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it feels like to see that ripple effect just going out and reaching so many other teachers and students. So I think we can open it up for anyone on the panel to answer these next few questions. But I'm thinking about all that has been put out already, this larger questions of what it means to be an American and broadening that definition. We've sort of touched upon this a bit already, but like, why now? What does this book, what does this project mean for us today in 2019? It probably would have meant something else, you know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago. What does this work mean for you today?
Yes, probably many of you know, our generation is going crazy. We want change in all of it, not just a little bit, all of it. And part of that, it's this identity is just so important to us. And we should get to define it, because we're the young people and we're the ones starting this movement. So we should define who Americans are. That's right.
Personally, my parents worked hard to get here. I'm not gonna have my citizenship objected to or questioned. I'm not gonna disrespect their work like that. We need this because too many people have been questioned about why they're here. And I'm tired of it.
I also think this project is related to student engagement. So we're at a place right now where schools are just failing a lot of students. A lot of students, they go to school, they hate it, they don't pay attention in class because it's miserable for them. And like, I can definitely relate to that too. But during this class, Ms. Lander was able to get us to like sit down and like think about uncomfortable questions, write about uncomfortable things, be really vulnerable and authentic. And that's not something that a lot of students get to have. And when you do have it, that's life-changing, that you become a lot more excited about going to school, you become more interested in learning, you become more open-minded. So basically, I think if we can have this project expand, it'll impact people in this upcoming generation to not just, you know, work on expanding the definition of what it means to American, although that is a very big and worthy goal in itself, but also just become better people who are more open-minded and feel excited and passionate about the work that they do instead of feeling miserable and something that they have to go through every day.
Going off of what Kat said, when we first started this class and when we ended it, we were completely different people at the end of it all. You could see it in us because on the first day, Ms. Lander threw us into the Socratic circle. None of us talked, for the majority of the class. And it was a lot of silence except for the people who knew who they were and were proud of themselves. They spoke out and they helped the people that didn't know figure out what they wanted to say. And I think out of all of this, we learned to listen to other people, and even though if they don't agree with you, to accept their opinion. And I think that having that spread out into the world would be such like a helpful tool to have. And I think it's so cool that with this project, we can sort of get that out there.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, finding one's voice. It's really what democracy is about. The more people that have their voice and are confident in who they are and are able to share that and express that, that will inform, you know, how we go about doing this project of democracy in this society. Yeah. So I think right now we'll open it up a little bit to questions from the audience. I think for the sake of recording, when you ask a question, I'll just repeat it into the mic, and then unless you have a question for a specific person, anyone can feel free to jump in and answer that question. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I have a general question. What were some of the stories? I'd like to know who you guys are.
Sure. Yeah. So what were some of the stories about? They were shared a little bit briefly, but if anyone would like to share their story in more depth, that would be welcomed.
I was born in Manhattan, New York. I was born in a Spanish neighborhood. My dad owned a bodega. So I was surrounded by diversity growing up. I moved to a few places and to Lowell, which is also a very diverse place. So I never really knew what it was like to actually have diversity not be there. So I was personally very ignorant about it. And then the class took a trip to Montgomery, Alabama, and I realized how different it truly is in the rest of the world, in the rest of the country, in the rest of the state. I'm actually in Springfield now, and I can see that just across the state, it's very different from where I grew up in. So I wrote about that. I wrote about how I was blind, how I thought everything was happy-go-lucky, but there's still work to be done.
Lucy, you want to share your story, too, before we move on? We can hear from a couple of voices.
Yeah. We came to hear you, not me.
So my story is about how I came to understand racism. And so I was born in Democratic Republic of Congo, and I had to flee the country and became a refugee when I was 2 years old, and I used to live in a refugee camp in Rwanda, and then we moved to Uganda, and we started the visa process, which took 5.5 years, and when we finally got here, in one of my classes, a student said something to me that at the time seemed like it was, you know, normal, or, you know, they didn't mean it or anything. And then I thought back about how, why I left my country. And I realized that even though it wasn't the same type of racism, it was still, you know, separating a group of people and judging them or persecuting them for who they are. And yeah, that's how I came to understand. Yeah.
Great, thank you. Anyone else like to share a brief description of their story in more depth before we?
Oh, and if you want to know what she said, sorry, I said she, what she said, please buy the book.
Shameless.
My story was about belonging. I was looking for a place that I can call home and the place that can accept me. I lived in the camp for 17 years and then moving out. Oh, by the way, when I was in the camp, I was born there, so that's why I was looking for a place. That place didn't recognize me as a Zambian, and yet they had a law that said if you're born in there, then you're a citizen automatically. But I was not accepted, and wherever I would go, they could identify me as Zambian. So when I came here, I was still looking for that place that can actually accept me and call me home.
My story opened up with a question that a family friend asked me when I was about 11, and that was, are you a math and science person or a humanities person? So when 11-year-old me heard this, I had like a mini crisis because during middle school, I was a huge Percy Jackson fan, and I heard this Greek song, and I ended up like studying Greek for 3 years, like because I wanted to understand this one song. And at the same time, I also learned how to code because I wanted to make my Tumblr themes. So here I was, you know, studying programming languages and also human languages. It seems like two sides of the spectrum, like humanities and science. And later on, I realized that, you know, I didn't really have to select one. So that was the title of my story, Select One? And I ended up starting an organization that helps high schoolers learn about science communication, because that really is the field that connects science, which impacts everyone, with the people that it impacts. And it's not just something that's limited to scientists. So, yeah.
We can take your question. Okay. The moment has passed. Other questions from the audience? Yes.
I am eligible.
Other questions from the audience? Yes.
Could you speak a little bit about the process of setting up the project and what sort of bureaucratic hurdles you need to go through?
So the question was about logistics, setting up the project itself, any bureaucratic hurdles you may have faced, what is quite a complicated project to try to undertake.
So, and just to clarify, is that for the book that we published or for the national project? So for the book, it was very organic. It was something that I came to the class with like the first week going, this is an idea that I have. I don't know where it's going. Will you join me on this adventure? And we built it together. So a lot of it was the first semester getting the source material in the same way that you would write a research paper. Instead of researching for a topic on a piece of US history, we were researching ourselves. And so we did a series of projects that helped us explore who we were, where we had come from, and then use that as the basis to try to figure out what story each wanted to tell. There was a lot of iteration, there was a lot of editing, there was a lot of sharing in small groups, one-on-one, iterating. And then the national project was a conversation that all of us had the last day of school. This class had stayed together, so the first semester's class ended in January, but we just kept sort of meeting and texting each other and sharing out the work of the project. And so at the end of the school year, many of the authors were graduating and called everyone back and was like, do you want to take this national? And we have two long whiteboards in my classroom, and we just sort of mapped out what that would look like and what would we want that to be and what were our goals if we wanted to take it national and what we would need to do. And we went from there, and this summer we raised the money to fund and support the teachers and to buy the books for the classrooms. We wrote up, all of us editing, an application process. And then we sent it out across the country to different organizations and schools and teacher programs. And within a month, we had over 40 teachers apply and then 50 to 60 teachers apply. We read those applications. We selected teachers. And then since then, every teacher has two student founding members. and they're in communication every week. We're running webinars. We built out, we took the curriculum that we created as a class, built it out, shared it with them, and then are providing one-on-one support. And then one of the student founders is going to be designing each of those books and working with each of those classes to publish a book of their classes' stories. And then Kat is brilliantly putting together our website, which is just launching. The website is on a bookmark that you can get when you buy the book outside. And that's gonna have a database of all the 1,300 stories so that anyone can go listen to those stories. And our hope is that both everyday people, politicians, but really I think for me as a teacher, I see it as a classroom resource that students and teachers can go to that space and search up a whole range of different stories. We're gonna have them tagged so that there are categories of stories, but that you can listen to stories from all around the country. So it's a little bit about the process.
Yeah, a question from over here.
Are teachers required to write their stories?
Question is, are teachers required to write their stories as part of the project?
No.
So that leads me to ask, why not?
Follow question, why not?
While they are welcome to, we feel as if this is more of a student engagement activity for students to discover who they are and what makes them who they are. Teachers are perfectly welcome to, but the book is required to have the students' stories.
I had a question up in the front. Yeah,
you're right. I was a sub in Lowell for a while. Not a good sub, but I was a sub, and I think I recognize some faces. But I would look out at the class.
Oh.
You remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. What was that day like?
I would look out at the class, and I would wonder, you know, what have these students been through? And, we hear what it's like in the Congo and Zambia and, you know, other places. And in general, you know, what's it like, particularly for the students, to immigrate, to come here and make that transition with the family? I mean, how do you make that decision? You know, so this is great, and I really look forward to reading the book.
Thank you. Yeah, a question over here, and then we'll come to the right side of the room. So I'll just repeat the question. In an ideal world, if you had all the funds and means to make this project what it could be in the future, what would that be? Where to next, potentially?
Every American who wakes up in the morning, gets a cup of coffee, should read our book. That's
really even the ones who don't like coffee, because I don't like coffee, they're accepted to read it too.
You said to make this project bigger, correct?
Whatever your dream is.
My dream is there a place where everyone feels comfortable sharing their voice and everyone could listen in no matter where you're from and be able to realize there's people like me. I belong. I'm right.
I definitely think that even though this book is about what it means to be an American, it deserves to be something that is worldwide. Because our initiative is of something for the whole world to figure out.
New book idea, I Am Human.
Yes, a question over here. The question, I'll just repeat it for before you jump in, Lucy. So now that you're all published authors, a title that nobody can take away from you, is that something that is influencing your next steps or your visions for how you see your life unfolding in the future?
Yes. The class and writing the book really helped me pick what major I was going to do in college, and which is political science. So I hope by me taking that path, I can actually reach out to other people and help tell their stories. Yeah.
I know growing up, I definitely always came back to writing stuff. I loved writing scripts, and I loved writing like little stories that I would tell my friends and stuff. And so, like, writing this book and officially calling myself a published author is so cool because it's... It's something that I've always wanted to be, something as like a title that identifies who I am. And I would love to someday publish a book of my own. And I don't necessarily want to go down the road as being a, like a professional author and like having that being my only career. But I do know that I want to write stories in the future.
For one thing, it's a big confidence boost. Resumes are much stronger now. But with the confidence boost and with the knowledge that my voice can be impactful, I'm hoping to take that courage and confidence and eventually run for office. So if you see the name Philly Marte on any ticket, check it off. Thank you.
I'm really interested in exploring how storytelling can be used to make change, especially like in journalism, for example. Like, we could have told our stories as like, you know, like every year, like X number of people emigrate from this country to the United States. But instead we told the story of, you know, one specific immigrant and how, like all the details of like what they went through and like what they're thinking. And I think that's a lot more powerful. And I think there are really interesting ways to combine that sort of like hard data that you don't really process as well with like the emotional like storytelling that like really sinks in for people.
For me, it will be encourage everyone to write their own story.
I have a question way in the back. Yeah. Yeah, so at other students at Lowell High School, how has the book been received?
Okay, so when I first told my friends that we wrote a book, they thought Miss Lander was a little, because, you know, writing a book is a big thing, especially for a high school student, because we barely want to write our essays that we have to write. And when I first told everyone, when they read our stories, they find it kind of weird in a way, because they've never thought of school as being something like of what we wrote in the book, you know? And I know when I passed my my book to the people in my new school, because I no longer go to Lowell High, I go to Tewksbury, and when I passed them our book, they read it, and after reading it, they kind of were dumbfounded in a way. They passed back the book to me, and they literally just told me, wow. They just passed it to me, and they said, wow. That story, that book was amazing. And I feel like that's cool in a sense.
So personally, when I told my friends that, yeah, I'm a published author now, they took the book and they read it. They thought the stories were cool, and they said, and since we went to Montgomery, Alabama, a lot of them are like, why didn't you tell me to take that course? I have to take it now. But then I told them, unfortunately, we're only going to Alabama just once, so sorry.
Yeah, so now that I'm in college, the first thing that my friends called me was obviously nerd, because, I mean, a college student, a published author, right? So, and then they, for some reason, call me America now. So for as a result of the book, they now call me just my nickname, so.
Well, when I told my friends that we're writing a book, they were kind of scared, and I was too. But then after writing a book and then telling them what the processes and everything, most of them decided they would take American Diversity, but unfortunately, Ms. Lander was not doing it this year.
Yeah, a lot of people were upset when we told them that Ms. Lander was gonna be leaving because they wanted to take the course because of Ms. Lander, because she's an amazing teacher. She made the course what it was.
Unfortunately, a lot of my friends still haven't read the book. So I think that tells us that there's still a long way to go. A lot of people think that this book isn't for them. It's just, I don't know what they think the book is, but I feel like it might not seem as accessible to some people. So that's still an area for improvement.
I think we have time for one last question, if there is one in the room. Yes. Yeah, so after all this has been done, what new reflections are there for your own cultural backgrounds and your heritage?
I understand, and at that moment, I understood that I was very lucky to actually be here. I could have, you know, have not been here at the age of 2, So I'm truly grateful for that, and especially my mom, she's here, and I love her, and thank you. and so I'd like to thank her so much for all the struggles that we've been through. She protected me through most of them, but some of them I do know, but I'm truly, truly grateful for that. Thank you.
For me, seeing how much my parents sacrificed for me, and like, I can say whatever I do, I won't pay them. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's seeing how much I struggle and how much many of my friends struggle. It just gives me the courage to like advocate for my people and the rest of the people that struggle like us.
For me, it was acknowledging that people show emotions towards other people in different ways. And from my story, I learned that, like for instance, my father, I learned that even though he wasn't there my whole life, he wasn't there because he didn't feel like he was ready to be there. And I learned that a lot of people are uncertain about who they are and what they can do as a person. And a lot of it's intertwined in a sense because of that. And I learned that I should respect that in a way because people are different and yeah.
Reflecting on my story, reflecting on how much my family's done for me, my father specifically, he could have been very successful where he was. He was doing well, but he sacrificed that and more to come here. And his reasoning when I asked him was to give us a better chance. And I'm always going to love my parents. I'm always going to appreciate what they've done for me. And now that I'm here, and I'm lucky to say that I am privileged, I am not going to let that go to waste.
So I can't think of another a better way to end than to, you know, call into the room all the people that have helped us be here today. You know, none of us are here as a product of our own efforts alone. So many of our friends and family, people have come before us. They've worked tirelessly and made so many sacrifices to have helped us achieve what we have achieved, and what better gift to bestow to pay it forward and to offer that to others. And so with that, I want to thank Ezekiel and Idalis and Lucy and Philly and Diane and Kat and Safia and Ms. Lander for all the work that they've done and for sharing their stories with us today. I want to thank you all, the Boston Public Library, WBUR, and all our other partners for the Boston Book Festival. So thank you so much.
One last note, it's Charles' birthday today, so happy birthday to Charles.